Are they going to fix this thing or just keep talking about fixing the global economy? Starting this weekend and culminating in 3 weeks, world leaders are sitting down to talk about what to do about the worst global downturn in 80 years. New rules to clamp down on the excesses of banking and finance. New ways to prompt a global economic stimulus, or not, depending on the level of political backbone. Here to help us understand the enormously high stakes is Harvard economics professor Ken Rogoff. He's the former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund and has spent a lot of time learning the lessons of previous financial catastrophes. Our conversation is part of a continuing beat here at Now called Out of the Woods, Rebuilding After the Great Collapse.
The big problem that they can't figure out how to solve is while we were sleeping, they let this banking system grow and grow and grow, and they provided these guarantees and said not to worry. But in a lot of European countries, the banking liabilities, are what they owe, are 3 and 5 times national income. So they can't guarantee them. And so there, many of the policymakers are now really like, you know, deer caught in the headlights of the storm. They don't know what to do. They don't have a clear picture. There's a mammoth recession going on. But in some sense, if you step back, that's manageable. We have booms and we have downturns. What's scary about this is that the financial system has imploded and you can't get going again without fixing it. So if they're going to fix it, they've got to tell us where we're going. Where are we going in 4 or 5 years? Where do we want to be?
Ken, this financial disaster from a Financial Times editorial this very week represents, quote, the intellectual and moral failure of those who were in charge, a failure for which there is no excuse, the editorial argues. So with the group of 20, the G20 meeting essentially now, do you think now they're going to repair the rules that led to this?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard not to get angry. I mean, this is just a once in 100 years meltdown. It's awful. And you see we lived in this gilded age before where these people were getting richer in a way you just can't imagine. And we had these policies that just sort of stoked it. I don't quite know. I'd say moral, it's a little strong for the policymakers, certainly intellectual. And they thought this time was different. They thought, we're the United States. We're special. We can do this. We can borrow lots of money and somehow magically get away with it.
Trees keep growing to the sky. Property values will always keep going up.
It's just incredible that with house prices doubling in 5 years, just off the charts of things we'd ever seen, that you would have the head of the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, our leaders going and say, this is fine, this is financial globalization, it's just that we're doing a good job. It's hard not to get angry.
Now, Ken, you've spent a lot of time rigorously studying other financial crises. What does history show us? Is the current one fitting a pattern?
So my work's with Carmen Reinhart at the University of Maryland. It certainly is. I mean, Carmen and I would say we're just driving down the tracks of a typical super deep financial crisis. Good news, they do end. I mean, not for a while that they're going to end.
But someday we'll come out of this.
Someday we'll come out of it. I mean, what Carmen and I find is maybe it might take 4 years to get back to where we started in terms of our income when this is over.
Four years.
So maybe at the end of, you know, 2011, we'll be where we were at the end of 2007. I mean, that's sort of the typical post-war trajectory. I wouldn't be surprised to see unemployment reach 11 or 12%, maybe taking until 2011. Housing may not hit its bottom for another 2 years. Same with equity prices. This is a very deep recession. But at the same time, I mean, I have to emphasize, if we want to know where we're going to be 4 or 5 years from now, it'll be over and we'll have lost growth. But, you know, growth isn't just an end in itself. We lived pretty well 20 years ago in the United States anyway. We have to get back on our feet so at least we get there.
No, it's just difficult. I mean, you're a tenured Harvard professor and there are people who their jobs can't wait till third quarter of 2011. They're looking for a job Monday is what they're looking for. There's not much you can tell them.
It's a very tough market. I say especially for young people, it's been very tough. It's a very, very difficult and stressful situation, I think it's going to prompt a lot of social changes. I mean, I'm an economist, but I would say this year's story is the economy. Next year's story is really going to be start to be more and more the political fallout as people realize how bad this is, and they're going to get angry. You started out and read that angry quote from the Financial Times. That's like nothing compared to things we'll see, I think, a year from now. And that's in the places where it's civil. I mean, I think there are going to be parts of the world. China's could be unstable, Russia, Latin America, where it gets a lot uglier. It's a very frightening prospect.
So what do you think this process with the group of 20, first the finance ministers, then the big guys and women in early April, is that something our children are going to read about in their textbooks about what happened in 2009, the big response to the economic crisis?
I'd like to say yes, David. I'd like to say this is the turning point and it'll all be solved. But I think they're still sorting it out. Frankly, these G20 meetings are huge, and I don't think they really do sort things out. They ratify deals that they had, and I don't think we've had the big deal yet. But it's important to recognize the global nature. They tell each other about their problems. I mean, I think I've sat in on the deputies' meetings of these for the finance ministers and central bankers. And it's pretty sobering, I think, even for these very well-informed people to listen to somebody from China explain what's going on, or from India, or from Britain. So it may energize them to move. But I'm skeptical that this is the big moment. I'm just not seeing in the tea leaves a readiness to do the moves necessary.
Now, cash, capital, flows across borders very easily. I mean, that's the central feature of markets over the last 100 years. If you're going to deal with this, you're going to put in rules, for instance, to tell banks you have to have this much cash on hand in case your risky bets go bad. It's got to be some sort of international set of rules.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, we in the United States are used to doing it ourselves, and we make our rules, and everybody else does whatever they want. Here, we messed up. In some ways, we had the easiest rules, and the money poured into the United States, and we blew everything up. And now, if we put in really hard rules, all the money is going to drain out. There needs to be some balance across the world. And that means we have to work with our allies. We have to talk to people about what those rules should be. We can't just make them up ourselves. I'd also say having some kind of international regulation would give a little insulation from the politics. I mean, it was just so easy for the congressman to call up the regulator and say, "You're bothering my bank. You're telling them they have to have more capital. You're telling them they're too risky. Go away." And it's very hard for the regulator in these good times and these boom times. And I think having some insulation in an international body would be a good thing.
Well, the Europeans in particular are very keen on this. Finance ministers got together on a kind of letter that came out this week in advance of the meeting that's happening right now, calling for movement on this. But there is a sense among some experts that it's the U.S. that's being a little bit cautious about, worry about over-regulating. Are they going to work this out?
Well, I mean, I have to say, 2 years ago, Angela Merkel of Germany said, we need a little bit of transparency in the hedge funds and investment banks. I just like a little bit of reporting. I mean, now that would be considered nothing. But when she said it, she got her head handed to her by George Bush, our Treasury Secretary Paulson, Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister in the United Kingdom. She just got slaughtered. And now, that's nothing. I don't quite know if the Europeans know what they're doing, but their instinct is right that we need more transparency. We need the regulators to at least know what's going on. We need light.
You're hearing from a congressman from actually these parts, Massachusetts, Barney Frank, head of the Financial Services Committee. He's interested in, for instance, transparency, as you mentioned, but also he's talking about some sort of super-duper regulator, making the Federal Reserve extra responsible for these financial institutions. Does that work for you?
Well, we need to change our regulatory framework. We had this sort of potpourri of regulators, and each financial institution says, which is going to be the easiest one to go to? It's like playing parents off against each other. In fact, even in the same bank, they would have one arm of the bank go to one regulator and another arm of the bank go to another regulator just in order to get the minimum regulation. And there certainly needs to be some coordination. I think it's a bit of an illusion to think that somehow, as good as the Federal Reserve is, they can magically make all this work. We may need, you know, a couple regulatory bodies with the different kinds of financial institutions that we have. But, you know, we clearly need a new framework to replace the one we have.
Last time there was a new framework guiding the world's financial system was after the cataclysm of World War II. This is another kind of cataclysm. But I suppose there's still a risk that we don't get the new structure, that we end up a year from now, that nothing much has been done, lots of words, no action. Are you worried about that scenario?
Well, I think it's pretty likely there's not going to be much decisive action for a while. Yeah, I mean, it's just too complicated. I'm pretty confident, call me crazy, but I'm pretty confident that in 4 or 5 years, we will have something decent in place. I mean, basically what needs to be done is pretty clear. You don't let banks take risks 30 and 40 times the amount of money that they have and tell the government they have to pay for it if something goes wrong. You don't have these complicated instruments that nobody understands, that don't have legal clarity, be traded off in some dark neverland that then pour back into the banks. You have to have some basic rules and regulations. I think beyond that, there is a fair amount of, you know, decisions to be made about how we go back to the future. So how can we preserve some of the creativity that the financial sector has? It's not all bogus. It's not all Bernie Madoff. And how do we, you know, rein it in some? I think that's a challenge. I think it, especially because of the international dimension that you mentioned, David, it's going to take time. Even if Larry Summers and Barack Obama and Tim Geithner decide this is the blueprint, this is what we want to do, you think we're going to be able to go convince everybody right away? I don't think so. So it's going to be a long, painful path, but I do think we will eventually get there.
Something else the G20 has been talking a lot about, besides asking every country that can to spend money on economic stimulus, is to give more money or make more money available to the International Monetary Fund. I used to be the chief economist over there, right? Mm-hmm. So that poorer countries around the world, really suffering in this economic downturn, can have some way out. Is that a good idea? There's talk of doubling the amount of money available.
Well, sort of yes and no. I mean, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank need to be reformed, their political leadership. They look like the world order at the end of World War II. I mean, it's a little bit like the Security Council in the United Nations. But the world economy has changed. China's huge. India's growing. Asia's 40% of world GDP, and they have world income. They have maybe a small part of the vote in these institutions. So what happens is the Europeans, who are just way overweighted in these institutions, they decide what they want, and the Asians say, well, I don't think so. And we have all the money. It's our ball, and we're going to go home. Also, even if you double the size of the International Monetary Fund, it is swamped by the size of these banking problems.
It's that bad for those smaller countries.
Well, some of the smaller countries aren't that small. This could hit Hungary. Ireland's at risk. Countries like Italy. And it can go on. I mean, this is going to touch some big countries. At least we'll go to the brink before this is over.
Now, there are people watching us right now saying, look, that's all very fine about changing the rules, more regulation. What people are concerned about is, will I get a paycheck from General Motors next Tuesday? I mean, there's very immediate concerns that people have. They're looking for ways that policymakers can bring some certainty, optimism, whatever it takes to get credit flowing again so that businesses can start doing business deals, so that hiring can start again. Is that ultimately what this discussion that the G20 is having is about? It's really about restoring confidence?
I think part of the problem that the politicians are having coming to grips with this is they won't admit how big it is. They just can't admit. I think it's at least a couple trillion dollars that needs to get taken care of.
In awful debt that may be worth virtually nothing.
To fix the banking
system. To fix the banking
would
system.
Be a couple trillion dollars. And instead, they say, well, we can do some fancy financial engineering, which, of course, got us into this problem, and we can do it for $1 trillion. And the trouble is, if you don't put enough money, if you're not decisive enough, you've done nothing. We're just still, that's what's been happening, frankly. We've had these bold-sounding measures that still weren't consistent with how deep the problem. And coming back to my work with Carmen Reinhart, if you look at other financial crises, we are probably going to end up having $8 or $9 trillion more in debt 3 years from now than we did at the start of this. That would put us at the norm for working these things out. A lot of it's coming from lost tax revenues, fiscal stimulus, and bailouts. And it's just taken so long for policymakers to realize that, unfortunately, as the clock ticks, the bill, you know, is going up.
Boy, this makes life worth living. We get through this horrible recession, and at the other side of the recession, the $8 or $9 trillion bill has to get paid for getting through the recession.
Well, I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, so that's a painful reality at the end of this. And I don't know what's going to happen. I personally believe we're going to end up deciding to inflate it away. Not completely, but inflate it down. That's the time-honored
solution. Wait, hold on a second. A Harvard economist is telling me that you want some inflation?
Well, certainly not in normal times, but this is a once-in-100-years event. And it's not just that the government will have borrowed so much, but I don't think we're having an easy time cleaning up this toxic waste. So right now, if anything, prices are falling, making cost of paying these debts bigger. We probably need to have a surge in the other direction. I want to be careful. I'm not saying German post-World War I hyperinflation.
Well, people are running around with Deutsche Marks in a wheelbarrow. You don't
right.
want that.
No, but maybe 70s style. I actually think we will end up doing that. It's a sad statement about our political system.
Well, how do you make inflation? I mean, I guess you could give all of us a raise, but how do you generate it?
Well, my former Princeton colleague, I had the office next to him at Princeton, Ben Bernanke, became famous for his helicopter speech saying we would just drop money from a helicopter on everybody. It's not quite, but basically we just keep printing it till we're blue in the face and eventually people don't want it as much.
Now, Professor Rogoff, I have it on good authority that you're really good at the game of chess.
Once upon a time, I was a professional chess player, believe it or not.
Seriously?
Yeah, when I was a teenager and a bit in college.
So you're adept at thinking many steps ahead, I assume. So let's play this out. We know that many banks are in a feeble state. I guess that would be one word, frail. We'll find out more bad information about banks as 2009 wears on, and then what's the next step after that?
I think there's only one end game to this, to use the chess analogy, which is that most of the large financial institutions have to go through some kind of bankruptcy. Now, we can't stick them in a 10-year bankruptcy because we need them. So we have to have some accelerated bankruptcy. I think basically we have to do that with most of the large banks. At the same time, we probably need some big amount of money to clean up all these toxic, weird assets. It probably needs to be done all at once. It's been very disappointing to me with the new administration, who have wonderful team, economic team, that they have not taken the bull by the horns yet. They're sort of wishing it away. They wish the economy would get better. You listen to their forecasts, and even though they say things are bad, but they're going to get better soon. They're not going to get better soon, and this problem's going to continue. And if we leave the banks the way they are, it's like our blood has too much cholesterol in it. It's not the arteries of our economic system aren't working. And we need to clean it out. And it's painful. It could make things worse for a while. But if we don't do it, if we don't clean up the financial system, we could be in and out of recession for a decade. And that's what happened to Japan. So it's very painful, but that's the end game. You face the music sooner, and you'll be growing again sooner.
Is it possible that somehow, amid this mess, it's an opportunity to come up with a world financial system that's somehow more just or perhaps more equitable?
Well, I think we've gone through this gilded age where everything was directed at consumption, to have a bigger house, more cars, more food, more everything. And, you know, I mean, eventually we had to get on another track. And this is sort of like having a heart attack, basically, and forcing you to rethink your life. What are your values? What are you doing? And it wouldn't be a bad thing if, as a society, that led to some rethinking. Not someone who favors having government ram it down our throats and tell us what our rethinking should be, But we definitely had this orientation where it was growth at any price. Who cares about the environment? Who cares about income inequality? And I think it would not be at all a bad thing if it forces a rethinking, which I think it will.
Well, Ken Rogoff, Harvard economics professor, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, David.
Head over to our website to see what happens at the G20 meetings. And while you're there, you can check out Obama Watch. We got quite a reaction when we mentioned this last week. It's a place you can track action on President Obama's many promises, and you can share your own opinions.
Connect to Now online at pbs.org. For Women's History Month, we're asking this question: has opportunity for American women now matched that of men? Tell us what you think and check out programs and online features we've assembled to spotlight issues related to women and men in the 21st century, a beat we call Life Now. Connect to Now at pbs.org. On the next edition of Now, everything's a gamble here in Las Vegas, but what about playing roulette with the health care of people driven out of work by the slumping economy?
I should have been in chemotherapy 30 days after my operation. It has been 4 months. I'm doing exactly what our town is noted for, gambling on my life.
We're leaving you now with an urgent reminder, because we can't have these conversations and do our investigative reporting without help from you. Please give generously to this public television station and help keep the station and Now on the air. And that's it for Now. From Boston, I'm David Brancaccio. We'll see you next week.